Our agenda is here. Any updates or changes to the agenda? Anything that we should add or move around on it? Today we have IRIs and queries as context keys, allowing frames to say that a predicate always points to a set, renaming literal to value, and figuring out whether we should distinguish a JSON-LD frame from a JSON-LD document. Anything else that we should discuss? Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah, in terms of, I'm thinking we probably should push out another editor's draft of the specs, as there's been a fair amount of change. Yvonne had asked if he thought we were stable with the syntax. I think we're really close there. So I want to see if we can, if what the group's feeling is. The main thing that's on the board is, I think, changing literal to value possibly. But other than that, it would be great if we felt we were converging on syntax.
Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I finally got around to add some initial support for JSON-LD in currently in the library RDF Extras, which is sort of a complementary library to RDFlib in Python. I don't think that this brings any new issue or anything today, but I will get more of a feel for the details of the spec as I follow that to implement more stuff. One thing that I did notice, though, was which I will probably write a mail about, is that for the tests, I changed the Sparkle stuff in the test suite to Turtle examples, because I do a back and forth conversion and compare the resulting graphs. And we might want to look into that. But I will explain more on that in a mail to the list later on.
Okay.
The link currently is this. It's a branch currently in RDF Extras.
Okay. Great.
Did you check the tests in to the main branch of the GitHub?
No, not to the JSON-LD account, because I added a partial bit of that to this repository, but I will get around to looking into how we should do generally for the test suite regarding this.
Okay. Greg, you updated the test suite quite a bit, and most of the updates look really good. So I think we're just going to keep going from there with the manifest that you've created and the tests. Right now, you have your own test runner. Is that right, Greg?
Yeah, which is similar to the way I ran RDFA tests. So for everything else, and typically I do RDF graph comparisons, but I didn't here, mostly because if we wanted to do a web-based test runner, I just wasn't aware of the same algorithms being available to do good graph comparison. And Sparkle seems like that's a standard way to do it. There are Sparkle implementations in JavaScript if we choose to go there. Of course, another way would be to not go not do an RDF comparison really at all, but just turn the RDF back into normalized JSON and then compare the normalized JSON. But certainly we can discuss what strategies for that should be.
Okay. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I was thinking along those lines, because although there is an RDF diff module in RDF lib, I can understand that we might not be able to rely on such an approach for the general tests. But as Greg said, we might want to think about comparing normalized graphs or normalized JSON trees. But we should take that back to the list.
Okay. I know that when we first set up the test suite, we didn't want to do any Sparkle anything. That's the reason we had the normalized, kind of the normalized. We just wanted to do a string compare, a simple string compare, and that's why we had the normalized JSON as the kind of the result of the test. But in some cases that, I guess, Greg, in some cases that just doesn't work out.
Well, I mean, pretty much every test that's in there, other than the RDF conversions tests, It does a straight hash comparison, so it doesn't even require normalization. It's it's only the RDF generation that does Sparkle tests, and I can see, you know, that was sort of the conundrum. If you got triples out, B-nodes, all of that, then Sparkle's a great way to do that comparison, but it does invoke that tool set.
Right.
Otherwise, what you'd need to test, I guess, is JSON-LD to RDF, RDF back to JSON-LD, and normalize the result of that, and then compare.
Hmm.
Which is it's certainly very complex, and it's not necessary given that you can either do just a graph comparison if an appropriate comparison algorithms available, say in JavaScript or Sparkle, which has been proven to work.
Right. Do you know if the JavaScript Sparkle implementations are fairly complete?
You know, I haven't played with them.
Okay.
Yeah. If I had time, I would certainly get much more into JavaScript Sparkle or JavaScript RDF stuff in general. But.
Right. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah. One problem is, although the route that Greg just described, parsing the JSON-LD and then serializing it as a normalized JSON structure is indeed rather complex, and you wouldn't know when you develop where in that chain things fail. So I agree with that. But the problem is that Sparkle implementations are also quite complex, apart from the really simple tests. And perhaps we should look into RDF, actually triple set comparison. There is a fairly understandable implementation of it in RDFlib, which might be interesting for us to consider even regarding normalization, because it handles the B-node conundrum.
Yeah, I have one in Ruby as well, although it is just doing Jeremy Carroll's algorithm, it is not simple. I mean, it's on the order of complexity of the normalization in the first place. Important thing to have, and if one is available, that would probably, I certainly think doing triples comparisons is a simple thing to do. It's understandable why you can't do that for RDFA, but for JSON-LD, it's just as possible as with, say, Turtle.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, I guess we'll just mark this down as a problem that needs to be solved. We've got a couple of ideas on the table. We just need to kind of talk through them at a later time. All right. Anything else on the agenda that we need to discuss before we move on? All right. I'll go ahead and scribe for today. All right, so first up is issue 43, use of IRIs and queries as context keys. Greg, would you want to do an introduction to this, and then we can take it from there?
Yeah, so the issue is, if you are serializing, say, from RDF into JSON-LD, where you have you have namespaces, but you don't have terms. You can easily create queries, but you'd like to have the full coercion expressivity. So certainly you need to be able to describe that a property designated by a query is an IRI or possibly a type, a date or some other data type. The only way to do it currently would be to basically mint, either not be able to use the abbreviated forms or to mint terms to do that, which is just doesn't seem like the right way to go. In my own implementation, I have allowed anything that can be an IRI in the key position within a context. So currently, right now, it's either an NC name or empty string. I've added to that query or IRI, which then allows you to use an object form to define that data types or lists or whatever else you want. And the ID field within that isn't necessary anymore since you already have an IRI. So the proposal basically is to allow that use case.
So I had a chat with Dave Longley last night about this, and he said that the JSON LD implementation, the JavaScript one, and the Python one, and the PHP one, basically implement this already. So he is on board with adding this as a feature as well. And after hearing some of his argumentation, I think I'm good with adding this feature as well. I can't really see that much of a downside. There are, like Marcus had mentioned, there are a few corner cases we might want to look at, but those seem to be fairly easy to address. Meaning that there's a clear technical solution. We just need to make the decision that we're going to support queries as context keys. Anyone else have any input on this? Marcus.
Another question that arises there is that by doing so, you could have several definitions for the same term. So you could define the term by an NC name with the QRI or with the full URI. So basically, you would end up with potentially three different URIs for that same term and three data types, for example. So we would have to specify how to merge those different definitions together.
So in my implementation, all the coercion and lists is recorded on an IRI basis. So the table I have is indexed by IRI, so the expanded term.
Yeah.
So there is a question of, well, what would happen if you had a query or an IRI that in turn referenced, it had an ID specification to something that was different? I think that it would just be ignored because it would never get involved. It might create a mapping, but I don't believe that the algorithms would actually invoke that, since the mappings are only invoked when you have a term or a query, not an IRI. In other words, if we describe that you split the key on a colon, and then you look up based upon the first part of that colon. So that would, with either an IRI or a query, you would just get the term part of that. You would never actually look for the query itself or the IRI itself to do expansion.
Well, but nevertheless, sorry.
Let's see, Nicholas is on the queue next.
Yeah, Marcus, you can go ahead and reply to Greg first.
But nevertheless, if you have a term defined and a QRI, both could end up to be the same IRI then in the end. And then somehow you have to merge them or pick one of those two definitions.
Yeah, the last
if
one.
If I understood you correctly, you would take the first one and discard the second one, right?
Well, actually, I think that's probably the other way around. It would it'd be a pretty equivalent to if you had a term defined in one context and then redefined it in another context. So I think the last wins. It also might be that this is considered an exception in the API, and I think I saw something in there about that. I don't really know. For me, it's not very practical to detect that and emit an exception, because I will just go through in order and update the mapping based upon the data that I see. I don't even know if we want to specify what the behavior is.
Well, the only problem arises if the definition is within the same context.
It could be considered an error.
Or we just
Nicholas,
take
you're on
definition.
The queue.
Yes, I think that there might be some problem here, but one thing that strikes me is that we probably should define that either a precedence rule for resolution, so that if there is both a term and a QRI rule for a specific IRI, we should use the term if available. Or, and also, which I don't think we have discussed, there should probably be the possibility to define two different terms for the same IRI, but with different coercions.
That's possible right now, isn't it?
Certainly is.
It is. Okay, great.
And that would be a, you know, one would win. So if, as with other implementations, I basically do a reverse mapping in order to turn the IRI back into a term. And that that's not really well defined, which one wins in that case.
I thought Nicholas was saying something different. I thought, Nicholas, you were saying that you could have two separate terms, and depending on which term you used, the IRI would be coerced to something different. So you
yeah.
have foo and bar, and both of them map to the same IRI, but foo has a data type of datetime, and bar has a data type of XSD integer.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
That we don't have right now, I think.
I think
if you manage those coercions using expanded IRIs as the key rather than the terms themselves, then you do potentially have a problem there, and that maybe argues for that not being a correct way to do it, so that you could use two different terms for the same IRI definition that have two different behaviors, if that's a desired effect.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the idea that you can reset the IRI, I think I'd favor us just making it an error or making it ignored, because it seems kind of strange to define a prefix somewhere at the top, right? And then all of a sudden, later on, let's say you define a prefix fof, and then later on you do fof colon age, and then you set the ID to something else in there. It seems strange that you should even be able to do that. I can't think of a good, compelling use case where that would be required. So I think that rather than assigning a different IRI to that, I think we should just kick out an error or silently ignore it, either one. But still allow the coercion stuff to, you know, take effect. Marcus, you're on the queue.
But if you disallow that, I mean, you're disallowing the same scenario as overwriting that prefix in a later context. That as well would change the IRI.
Well, yes, but I guess I don't see the problem with that.
Well,
like,
I guess the
point is you can change the prefix at any point, but the query mechanism is slightly different in that with that mechanism, with the query mechanism, you cannot set the IRI.
So
there is an interesting case. Sorry, go ahead.
So you would propose that you can specify for key definitions, which are QRIs or absolute IRIs, you can just set the data type, right? And you can't set the ID.
I believe so. That's what I'm proposing. I'm wondering what everyone thinks about that.
I think that sounds very good, the wise choice. Also, I think that if you use a QRI and define a coercion, that QRI should be resolved immediately so that the coercion is only for things, properties with this IRI. Then if you have defined that prefix and don't change it, the QRIs will look the same in the data. If you change it, they won't look the same because the only rule in effect is for properties with this IRI and not with the syntactical or lexical QRI. So this is basically just a shorthand for saying every property should be coerced.
Okay.
Like that.
Yeah, now I understand. Yeah, I think that's good. Greg, you have the floor.
Yeah, I agree that the only time an ID should have an effect is if the key is a term, and otherwise should either be ignored or generate an exception. I think the other part of that is if we are more formal in saying that the coercion is stored on the expanded value, then because there's also a case if you define FOF and then coerce FOF knows, and then you redefine FOF, and then you use FOF knows, what is the, does it have a coercion? Because it might, you know, FOF knows might now expand to a different IRI. So I think we have to be clear about that, and I would say that the way that we do that is by saying the coercions apply to or map to the expanded version of those terms, and that's in fact what's used when we look to do coercion, expand the key and see if that has a coercion and effect on it.
Yep. Marcus.
So if you do that on the expanded IRI, that would prevent the use of two different terms with two different data types, because they would end up in
yes,
the same
right.
IRI, but have different data types, right?
That's correct.
Would it? We don't expand terms.
Oh yeah, that's true.
You don't expand terms, but you save the coercion rule based on the IRI. It is applied to.
Yeah, but if you use a QRI or a full URI in the key instead of a term, then you have locked every value for the property with this URI to that coercion rule.
Exactly, and then if you have a term which resolves to the same URI, it would be overwritten by the definition by the QRI, for example.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. But then again, this is it, you should probably don't use this regularly. I.e., don't use QRIs or IRIs bound to coercion. This is mainly for the cases when you generate, as Greg described, from RDF. Actually, I myself would advise against that generally, because when you automatically serialize RDF, you don't know if every property will use the same data type. So you have to look ahead to see that every usage of the property uses that. And if that's the case, then you can do this short form where we coerce every property.
Yes, but nevertheless, if you implement it that way, even if you are not using the QRIs in the key position, if you're just defining two different terms which have the same IRI and different data types, that wouldn't work.
Is that an important use case?
I think that might be an important use case. I might want to define created date as one property and created datetime as another property. Two different shorthands with two different data types. So terms.
So if that's the case, I think what we would need to do is say the coercion rules are stored on both the unexpanded and the expanded version, and when you see a mapping, you first see if there's a coercion on the unexpanded term, and if there is, use that. Otherwise, you look for coercion on the expanded version.
Yes, but only for terms, not for QRIs, because they will be expanded directly, because they are shorthands for the IRI. But terms are special in this regard, I believe. They pack more power, if you will.
So if I define a coercion on a term, and then I use a curie that maps to the same thing, do I expect that the curie has the same coercion applied to it or not?
That's a corner case, and I think that it shouldn't define a term and a coercion mapping for the IRI itself. If you do, we should handle it in some way, either drop it or raise an error. It would be bad to mix those forms.
You could potentially define three different rules, right? Or more. You could have a coercion on several terms that map to the same IRI, different coercions. You could have a coercion on a curie that maps that IRI, and you could have a coercion on the IRI itself.
Yes, but I believe that coercion on the curie and coercion on the IRI itself are the same thing.
Okay, so clearly there are some other issues that we need to work through. I think what we need is a proposal put forward on the mailing list that we can kind of look at in its entirety and discuss. But as for the actual issue, using IRIs and curies as context keys, I haven't heard anyone say that they don't want to do this.
Well, I'm actually about to ask that.
Okay.
So
Mark, I'm sorry, I jumped you. Marcus, go ahead.
So really, the only real use case I can see in supporting that is from when you convert from RDF to JSON-LD. And it's arguable if you need such kind of optimizations, if they bring a heap of problems with them, as we just saw. So I kind of question if we need that feature, because it's not that trivial as it initially seemed to be. Do you see any other use case for that feature except conversion from RDF to JSON-LD?
Nicholas.
Yeah.
Is it my turn?
Yes.
Yeah. Great. I kind of agree with Marcus, actually, because I think that when you're automatically serializing RDF and use prefixes and use the QRI form, coercing the values for that, to me, somehow feels like a half-baked, halfway towards proper JSON-LD. I'm a bit wary about it because, as mentioned before, in RDF, you can have all kinds of values for a certain property, potentially. So you could have one value which is a language tagged string and another which is an XSD string and something which is an IRI reference and so on and so forth. So there can be all kinds of varying. Whereas with terms, you lock down this entirely. So I kind of prefer to defer this, but I'd like to hear Greg's use cases first.
Greg, you're on the queue.
So I think there are a number of cases when you're defining things when, if you're not coming from RDF, where the use of a query is very useful because it's compact and it avoids a lot of work in defining terms in a context where coercion isn't even required, but you just want the expressivity. So I think queries are a useful thing. In the case, I think the cases for doing coercion of queries really probably are mostly focused on RDF, and my own processor basically creates those coercion rules when it finds that they basically lead to a net reduction in overall size. If I'm typically, say, using a date, then coercing, say, DC created to a date becomes really useful. But just because it's useful in an RDF context does not mean that it is such a marginal corner case. I don't think we can really anticipate where the bulk of the JSON-LD is going to come from. Yes, I think there are some complications in how you deal with multiple coercions. I think we can address them. I think we've begun to do that here, and doing so sort of simplifies this thing. I also like the symmetry of being able to use anything that expands as an IRI in that key position, since every place else you can use an IRI, you can use either an IRI, a query, or a term. So why should it be a special case for the key position within a context?
Because there it's where you define it.
Yeah, although Marcus, we do have other places where we're using queries, like on the right-hand side, where we kind of break those rules, as in, you know, we're defining things up in the context, yet we've agreed now at this point to allow queries on the right-hand side. So it is, you know, Greg does raise a good point. Why aren't we allowing them on the left-hand side as well?
But still the context is about defining terms and prefixes.
I think it's a natural thing that someone will try to do. And throwing an error seems like it's not very helpful when the intention is pretty clearly been shown what the author wants to do. I don't think we have a good reason to not support that use case.
Maybe we should push that back to the mailing list.
Yeah, so let's do a quick straw poll on to see where people stand right now. So the proposal is to allow queries as context keys. Yeah, so that's it's a very simple proposal.
Well, queries in IRIs.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, assume that I put IRIs in there as well. Yeah. So let's discuss this a bit more. Let's kick this back to the mailing list and have... I think what would help, Greg, is a concrete proposal, because then I think... it's either going to be evident that it's way too complicated and we don't want to implement it, or that it's fairly simple and we can just go ahead and, you know, implement it. I think they're good arguments on both sides of this. So let's just kick this back to the mailing list. Greg, if you could write a proposal, that would be great. And then we'll pick it up at the next telecon. Sound good? Anything else that needs to be discussed about this?
I just thought of something I saw recently in another part of JSON land where they are sort of testing the ground on concepts like prefixes, and I saw some example using a colon, which I recall now when I remember thinking about this issue then, thinking that for one, it seemed like there might be useful to coerce those values. I think there were links or something like that. So that might be in favor of this. On the other hand, I'm not sure that those namespace mechanisms are isomorphic to our use of prefixes and QRIs. So it might also indicate that such JSON would rather need terms, i.e. opaque terms, to allow colons in them, although I would not go there unless I really had to. But that's a reflection on what I've seen elsewhere, which might impact this.
Hmm. Okay. All right, anything else before we move on? All right, next topic up, actually, we're at 10:40. I'm going to move one of these up on the agenda, renaming literal to value, because the other two have to do with framing, and that's it's important but less important, I think, than the syntax. So issue 48, rename literal to value. The link for that is here. I think this is a pretty simple proposal. Marcus, did you make this proposal?
Yes.
Did you want to just do a quick intro on it?
Well, as you said, it's really trivial. It's basically just renaming literal to value, because literal is kind of, I don't know, it's coming from an RDF background, and I think that a lot of developers don't really know or don't really... see literal as what in the way we are going to use it, because literal can be also numbers. So I would argue that add value would be a better name for that keyword. So it's basically just to help developers to easier understand the concept of as literal.
Greg, you're on the queue.
Well, I think that literals are a common term in almost every programming environment, and they mean something different than value. Value has a range of things that include both simple and complex data structures, at least in my mind, whereas literal implies something that is not a structured, particularly a structured element itself. Certainly integers, strings, dates. You know, scalar might be another term that is technical, but a little more descriptive.
Well, the thing was more that you have the value and the data type. So literal is the result of that thing.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of as well. The literal is a combination of the data type and whatever the name should be for this thing. And value might be better. It might be the most natural choice. Alternatives to that would be some name, not lexical representation, because that would be a very strange term, but lexical or string, maybe, something like that. Wrapper, perhaps.
Mm. Yeah, I think opposed value probably is more descriptive.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it would...
Go ahead.
Yeah, value with an at sign before it is just a token anyway, so...
So I chatted with Dave Longley about this last night, and he was fine with value. And I also agree. I think value is a bit more colloquial, meaning that developers would probably recognize it a bit more easily than literal. And it does, I mean, literal is very much from the RDF world. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing, but I think that the RDF world tends to use terminology that's a little more complicated. It's more precise, but when you try and talk about that stuff with a regular, just a web developer, I found that their eyes tend to glaze over because of the terminology. It's kind of, they have to learn new terminology, and that's difficult, I think. So I'd be very much in favor of changing literal to value. I think it would resonate more with web developers who is basically who are the community that we're trying to address with this spec. I don't know if I act you before Nicholas.
Yeah, I'm done. So okay. Act me.
Okay. So Greg.
Yeah, I actually think that value might resonate with a lot of RDF people as well, since you could argue that a better expression of literals in RDF would be using RDF value to describe a node that describes, that has the string value and data type and the rest. So. Yeah, so I think that value might actually work on a number of different levels.
Okay, good. Anyone opposed to the change? We'll do a straw poll if no one's opposed. Okay, so the proposal is to rename the literal keyword to value. All right. Done. All right. So what time is it? 10:46. Let's do issue 42 next and then go back to the frames thing. So, distinguishing a JSON-LD frame from a JSON-LD document. I had a discussion with, I basically went through the whole agenda with Dave Wally to see, kind of get his impression on this. So, his comment on the JSON-LD frame is basically that a JSON-LD frame absolutely is not a document of any kind. Right, it's a framing structure, and more specifically, we shouldn't make it a JSON-LD document because that means that there are a whole bunch of corner cases that we we'll probably have to think about, right? So in his mind, the JSON-LD document is very different from a JSON-LD frame, and therefore we should not make a JSON-LD frame a JSON-LD document. That still raises the question of whether or not we need a different MIME type for it. We discussed that a bit, and both of us kind of came to the conclusion that, well, we don't really need to make a JSON-LD frame anything other than a JSON object at this point. We couldn't come up with any benefit derived from giving it its own MIME type or making it a JSON-LD document. We can just say, hey, look, it's a JSON-LD object, or sorry, it's a JSON object, and just leave it at that for now. Marcus, Marcus, I think you're the one that brought this topic up. Is that right?
I brought it up for context and JSON-LD documents previously. So I think you then, or someone else then, said that applies as well to to frame.
All right. So sorry. Nicholas, you're on the queue, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah. Have you considered just adding the root key frame to JSON use containing frames?
No. I don't think we had considered that. I hadn't considered that. Dave Longley might have considered that. I don't...
What happens if you include that?
Yeah, I don't know what I think about that. I don't know if we really want to add another keyword for that because it's not necessary. Right? Most of the times, frames are going to be expressed in the application's code. You usually don't. I mean, you could serve up frames from a URL, and I can definitely see use cases where you'd want to do that. But when you do that, the application probably knows that that document is a frame. So having to specify it, I can't think of a single use case where you have to specify via at frame or via MIME type for the frame to have the intended consequence.
I don't know. As I hinted at previously, I'm thinking about more automatic framing mechanisms in my stuff right now, and I will come around to writing down some kind of proposal regarding that related to frames. But one thing that I have thought about regarding frames, if I were to use them explicitly, is that I might want to publish them because they would constitute documentation for me, the skeletons of the data structures I would publish. And in those scenarios, I think that something like frame would be good just to explicitly distinguish this from proper JSON-LD instance documents.
But in a way, you're kind of making that a JSON-LD, you know, a JSON-LD document, right? So if you have at frame in there, you could say that that's a JSON-LD document, but if it has frame as a top-level thing, that's where you get the frame. If your application needs a frame, you can dereference a JSON-LD document, and if it has at frame in it, then it's a frame, right?
Yeah. I mean, I just thought about this, but I think that if we're worried that people look at frames and confuse them with instance documents, this would make it clear that they are not, just as a safety.
Right.
Same thing with context.
Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I think we went through the same discussion where contexts were originally just the body of a context, and that led to some potential confusion. So we decided that, in fact, context documents start with a context key that you then extract. also a frame, which I certainly believe that if we're going to have a data structure that holds a frame, then inevitably you're going to need to be able to retrieve that data structure through remotely from an IRI. If I imagine, for instance, a mapping or a web services mapping of the API to be able to specify the frame, I'm going to need to provide a document to do that. I don't have a way to really do that in line very effectively. So having documents, I think, is always going to be the case. The fact that those documents are obviously part of JSON-LD does argue that they should have something that's based upon a JSON-LD MIME type. And if we do use the same convention we use for context, that the frame is in the value of a frame key at the top level, then it's very symmetric with the way that we deal with remote contexts and avoids confusing it or having to have a special MIME type parameter. So I support that notion of using a frame in the top mm-hmm. level. Just as with the API, I believe in the API, if it's called with an object, that object is the content of the context, but the document contains a context. The same would be true for framing, where if it's called with an object, the object is the value of that frame key. And if it's called remotely, it's a document that contains a frame key and everything else is ignored.
Marcus, you're on the queue.
Well, I don't think that frames are, or that we can handle frames the same way as we did with context, because they are quite different in my opinion. And context is, it's quite often the case that you include the context directly in a JSON-LD document, but at least in my opinion, you would never do that with a frame. So the frame is really a distinct, let's say, concept of JSON-LD. So it's kind of a query language for JSON-LD. So in my opinion, the cleanest solution would be to create a new MIME type for JSON-LD frames. Because just having a MIME type parameter is not very visible.
Yeah, so the one argument that really resonates with me is that really JSON-LD frames are not JSON-LD documents, and so the proposal, Nicholas's proposal, to say, you know, well, maybe we want an at frame and we want to be able to embed a frame in that key, I think that sends us that while it's orthogonal with context, I don't think we should be supporting that notion. Right, I don't think that we should tell people that, oh yeah, JSON-LD frame is kind of like a JSON-LD document, because it's not. Right, I mean, it does have a context, but the way that you process the context and the way that you process the contents of that object are wholly different from a JSON-LD document. So if we had to do something, I would much rather we do what Marcus is proposing and create a new MIME type, if we had to do anything. I'm arguing that we probably shouldn't do anything until we get a better handle on how people are going to be using frames. But if we had to do something, then I would say that a new MIME type would be cleaner than trying to make it seem as if you could put a frame in a JSON-LD document. So yes, I mean, frames are the query language for JSON-LD. That's what they were kind of designed to do. Any other thoughts on this right now? Greg, Nicholas, are you leaning any particular direction? Nicholas, sorry, you're on the queue.
Yeah, well, I'm a bit wary about MIME type proliferation because people screw that up in usage every time anyway. I think it's cleaner in theory, but it never works as you expect it. And people are much more prone to looking at a document and thinking, hey, that looks like JSON-LD, than looking at the MIME type and seeing, oh, it's not JSON-LD. So from that point of view, I think that using frame to make it syntactically obvious that it's a frame, we should still not allow people to include that in JSON-LD documents because they're not, as you said. So I don't propose that we should add the frame keyword to the JSON-LD spec, but to the frame spec. There are other keywords in frames as well, isn't there? Which are not. So that it's only for the that part. It's not to make special kind of JSON-LD documents.
Okay.
Because I agree,
but
they're not.
I could definitely live with that if we put frame in the API spec, basically, where we define all the other special frame keywords.
But again, you're trying to make them look similar while they are not similar at all.
No, I'm trying to make them look less similar.
Well, by adding an at frame and having the same MIME type, you basically label it as they are the same type, and by having that at frame, you even give them the same structure.
They should not have the JSON-LD MIME type.
Yeah, they will not.
Okay,
the argument is that
so
they would have the JSON, just a regular JSON MIME type.
Yes. And since JSON-LD documents are not allowed to contain frame keys, they would look less similar than JSON-LD documents.
So
as it is,
why don't we just say it's a JSON document and we don't add that at frame?
Don't add at frame? Nicholas, that was a question.
My only fear is
you
if
said.
We add that at frame, it looks really or exactly the same as having an at context, which is a valid JSON-LD document.
But you can have a context in a frame document, and that makes it very suspiciously like an JSON-LD document. But by requiring a frame key at the top level JSON object, it would look less like a JSON-LD document.
Well, I don't know. So what's the argument against creating just a new MIME type for it?
It doesn't help.
But then again, we might be trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist yet. I think that we could certainly postulate that people are going to get framing documents confused with JSON-LD documents, but that makes a number of assumptions, right? The assumptions that we're making is that people don't look at MIME types, that people will be publishing frame documents on the web without and then fetching them and not realizing that it's a framing document versus a JSON-LD document. And really, when you look at a framing document, it has things like embed, and it looks very different than a JSON-LD document. A framing document looks very different from a JSON-LD document because there's no data in a framing document, right? So anyone that understood what a frame was would look at it and go, oh, okay, this is clearly a framing document. It's not a JSON-LD document. So, but the assumption we're making is that people would still confuse the two, and really there's only so much we can do in that instance. So if people confuse a framing document with a JSON-LD document, then it means that they probably don't understand what a framing document looks like, and if that's the case, then they probably wouldn't understand that at frame it means that it's a framing document, and they probably would also not understand that they should look at the MIME type either. So we're dealing with a very beginner level problem at that point, and I think the real way for that to be solved is that the developer would need to educate themselves between of the difference between a framing document and a JSON-LD document.
Nicholas,
you're on the queue.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. Marcus first, and then Nicholas.
Well, but still, it seems like a half-baked solution because we are creating a new MIME type for context documents and JSON-LD documents, and put all that framing stuff just in a plain old JSON document. So even if people are aware of it and would like to do the right thing, they can't do because they have to put it in a JSON document. So for example, that would also result that you have the same file extension on Windows, for example, so you can't give them a different icon, or you can't, in your editor, you can't open just frames, for example, or filter for just frames.
Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the framing example in the JSON-LD playground, that frame looks suspiciously like a JSON-LD document. Actually, I think it would even parse as a JSON-LD document with a couple of B nodes. And if people publish that, they will confuse that with a JSON-LD document. If we added the frame as an outer structure to that, it would be less obvious. It would be less like a JSON-LD document structurally, which is what people will look at.
Is it my turn again?
Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I think that just using a plain JSON document sort of fails the ability to follow your nose with a document and find out specifications that describes its contents, and therefore it needs to either be a JSON-LD MIME type or a subtype of JSON-LD. It could, for instance, be application slash frame plus LD plus JSON, but I think that's such a small case that it just doesn't seem to me that it really passes the funk test for creating a new MIME type. So I do think, even though there is some danger of making it too much like a JSON-LD, the fact is the contents of it is described in JSON-LD specifications. And if you follow your nose from the application slash LD plus JSON to the specification, and then we do have a at frame that's at the top, then you can clearly find out what the meaning of that is by looking at the specifications.
Yeah, in fact, well, you'd have to point to the API spec, right? Because we don't talk about the syntax of the frame in the regular JSON-LD document, or sorry, spec, JSON-LD syntax spec.
But you can't get to the API document from the syntax document, so there is
exactly.
A chain.
Right, exactly. I guess what I'm saying is I'm agreeing with you. We would have to specify a new MIME type in the API spec. If we're going to put follow your nose, and the follow your nose test would be brought up during the W3C review of the document, and people that would be a question that would be raised by the TAG. So that is a strong argument for having a MIME type, a different MIME type for a JSON-LD frame.
Right, but I think you can, if it's just JSON-LD, you'll get there by follow your nose.
But it's not just JSON-LD, because you have other keywords in a JSON-LD frame that are not special in any way with regard to JSON with the JSON-LD document. Right, so JSON-LD frame has extra keywords that a JSON-LD document does not.
Well, so you're arguing that in fact that it does enough to warrant something like a application frame dash LD plus JSON, which I could certainly go along with that. Yeah.
Right.
I can certainly go along with that.
Yeah, and that would I think address all of the issues with, you know, what happens if you want to publish these documents. It doesn't address Nicholas's issue of people confusing a framing document with a JSON-LD document. But I don't know if there is something. I mean, we could put at frame in there, but I'm not convinced that at frame would solve that problem either. Maybe it would. I don't know, is I guess what I'm saying.
What about doing both?
Doing both seems like overkill. It seems like overkill, right? So we've done. If we add a new MIME type, then we have done our technical duty, which is there's follow your nose to the spec, and there's a clear MIME type so people can publish the document, and you know the editors can use it in a special JSON-LD frame editor instead of a JSON-LD document editor. There are all those benefits that come along with it. The only thing that is left unanswered is the frame question. What happens when people confuse a JSON-LD document with a JSON-LD frame? And in that case, I think it's arguable both ways that at frame would solve that problem or not solve the problem. Right? I don't know if at frame would solve the problem, and if it doesn't, then we're stuck with this extra syntax that doesn't really do anything. I guess that's my concern, primary concern with that frame.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess the question is there something equivalent to a magic number that allows you to determine from the content of the file that it's a frame document? That frame certainly would act as a magic number.
It would. My concern, so the answer to that is no. Right now there isn't. You don't have to use any of the JSON-LD framing keywords in a JSON-LD framing document. So that would be an argument for having at frames. It's kind of a magic number. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I don't really feel so strong about it, but I think that it might be good just to clarify it. On the other hand, this magic number, we could use frame at frame colon true, i.e. we don't have to use it like we use context and wrap everything in it. We can just add it as an explicit token to say this is a frame. It's not very pretty,
yeah,
but it's...
Yeah, but what happens when their JSON processors end up putting that at the bottom of the document or off the screen? It doesn't address the use case that the problem that you're concerned with, which is you need people to understand that this document is a frame.
No, that's true, absolutely. But we do, as you said, we don't know yet. But if you look at the last two examples in the playground, the frame there at the bottom is, as far as I can see, a valid JSON-LD document.
Yeah, you're right. Also, keep in mind that frames can be an array, as well as an object. So if we were going to use the at frame key, I mean, it doesn't matter if we...
Sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Marcus.
What about if we add that at frame at the same level as we have at context in frame documents, so that the kind of the query itself is is put under the add frame key.
Right, I think that's what Nicholas is proposing.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were proposing to put add frame at the top level.
That is at the top level? I guess I'm
Well, confused. I mean, like, is add context under add frame or is it at the same level?
Currently, so if Nicholas, if we follow Nicholas's proposal, we would have only one top level object. That object would have only one key. It would be at frame, and then inside the at frame would point to another object. In it would be a context and all of the other framing.
Yeah.
What I'm proposing is to having one top level object which has at frame and potentially also at context of keys. And the query part is under at frame, and the context is out of that.
Yeah, that could work.
I wouldn't mind either way, although that would make it look a little bit more like JSON-LD, but you wouldn't accidentally parse it at JSON-LD because you wouldn't get no data from it.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, that makes the form look more like JSON-LD, so you might want to include both a frame and the data, and we didn't want that, right?
No, I don't think we do. Because, I can think of use cases where you could do that. I don't know if there would be very popular use cases.
No. If you might want to link to them and say that this was created by using this.
Right. Okay. Well, I think we're well over time for today. Let's go ahead and push this back to the mailing list and hopefully have a discussion there about it. I think the one thing that we have decided is that we are okay with having a MIME type. Is there anyone opposed to having a MIME type for JSON-LD frame? Maybe we can do this. JSON-LD frames should have a MIME type. Can we think of what the MIME type is quickly? Application LD plus
frame plus LD plus JSON. Frame plus LD plus JSON.
LD plus JSON.
Frame minus LD plus JSON.
No, it's plus. It's the weird way that you do MIME types. We looked this up before. We shouldn't be using minus.
Well, but I never saw a MIME type using two pluses.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think that if you look at it, that is that's what you're supposed to do.
No, the plus is denoting the syntax, which is JSON in our case. Frame is kind of the semantics of the content, so that's not, or LD is also kind of the semantics. It's not about the syntax.
Well, I think we can say that the actual MIME type is TBD, and we should follow the best recommendations that we can determine from
just plus or minus
IAM specs.
Yeah.
Okay, so JSON LD frame should have a MIME type, period.
A distinct MIME type from JSON-LD, or a separate MIME type.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. JSON-LD frame should have a distinct MIME type from JSON.
Related to.
We should say that again. JSON-LD frame should have
a MIME type related to a distinct MIME type related to JSON-LD. Yeah.
Is that what
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. All right. That's our call for today. Thank you, everyone. Sorry for going over by such a long bit. We'll have another call next week where we'll try to get through the rest of these issues. We are very close. I think this, and with today, I think the syntax is pretty much set in stone, or fairly. I mean, it's fairly stable, I would expect. Does anyone think otherwise?
I think it's pretty good. What I'd like to do is update the documents with value, and create another timestamp spec, and then maybe we can announce that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
But the one issue we didn't get to might add something, but that doesn't make it less stable, I believe.
Right.
Well, there is one thing which I will raise as an issue. That is regarding if we are allowed to use relative IRIs in documents, and that these might clash with terms. I came across that when I started working with it a bit more.
I thought we said that you cannot use relative IRIs.
I thought so too.
One of the simplifications.
I think that's very difficult if we do that. And I found this in doing the tests in particular, that you really need to be able to reference relative IRIs. Otherwise, for instance, all of the contexts that are used within them have to be absolute IRIs and are bound to the location of the spec, and that sort of violates every other form of linked data that's out there. What we said was that we weren't going to have base and vocab, but I don't... I mean, if there's some text where we said... we only allow the use of absolute IRIs. I missed that, and I think that that's draconian.
Okay, so you're saying that relative IRIs should still be allowed, but only relative to the base of the document?
Yes,
right,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you have a document in a context, you can reference the context using just the relative location within the document itself, rather than the full location that you retrieve the document from in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I saw that it was in the test that I came across that. I will type something down about it, because that raises an issue with terms, and there are three different ways of handling it. Either only absolute, but not necessarily full URIs, or demanding that local relative IRIs start with dot slash, or that we differ between term QRI or absolute IRI as one thing and paths as another thing, and that might complicate coercion in certain cases. But we can't go into that now. But
that is an
issue.
Okay, so please raise any issues that are not in the issue tracker. Please note them so we have a good idea, good handle of where we are.
Yes,
on the
I have a
the syntax and the API.
Yes,
okay.
I have a laundry list to some. Yep.
Great. Okay, thanks so much, guys. Have a great week, and we'll chat next Tuesday.
You too. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, you too.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.